Chapter 13. Senate Building. Trading on the ISE was suspended in the early hours of this morning when Acting Chief of State Admiral Cha Nyathil declared temporary martial law following the shock arrest of Cal Omas. A statement is expected in the Senate within the hour. Meanwhile, other galactic financial centers report brisk trading. KDYA shares closed 50.3 credits up on yesterday, and both Mandel Motors and Roche Industries ended the day up more than 30 credits. Market News, Business Headlines. Senator Gasell glanced at the holocams that transmitted Senate debates to every office, restaurant, and public area in the Senate building, then shook his head, eyes closed for a moment. "Full house," he said. "You'd better have a good speech ready, Cha. A really good one." Nyathil adjusted her uniform and prepared to go out onto the Chief of State's platform to address the Senate. Things weren't playing out quite as she'd imagined. But then battles never did, and the political arena was as prone to the fog of war as any fleet engagement. Jason Solo, whom she expected to see strutting around the Senate, was keeping a low profile. But she'd see about that. If she was going to be shoved out front to tap dance for his coup, she'd make sure he was visibly part of their double act. She wasn't taking responsibility for this on her own.
"It's temporary. It's for the duration of the war, and no ordinary citizens will notice an adverse impact on their lives," she said, rehearsing her key messages. "Play a bit of Omas's clandestine meeting footage. Wave around the news on Mandalore and Roche, and everyone nods and says, 'Yes, indeed, Admiral, we live in dangerous times. Please do look after us as an interim government, while the Chief of State's office is thoroughly investigated.'"
"I like Jason," Gasell said, suddenly very quiet. "But is he reliable these days?"
"Reliable for what?"
"I would never have authorized the Gedgen business. It was extreme."
"It's done. Corellia is wobbling a little, because their assorted lunatic fringes have given us a massive bonus by claiming they did it. Bathawi has been brought up short, because they probably think we did it, but can't believe we had the nerve. And, well, I never thought I'd live to say this, but those ghastly little Mandalorian savages have been wonderfully helpful."
"Cha, I don't want to worry you, but have you noticed they're rearming? With Verpine tech, too?"
"I certainly have. Best news of the week."
"They must teach you something at Staff College that's beyond us lesser mortals." Nyathil checked the chrono. She had 10 minutes to psych herself up into appearing as a safe pair of hands, reluctant to take the burden of the reins of state, and anxious to hand them back as soon as the current unpleasant business was over. Yes, she meant that, too. She wanted the Chief of State's post, but she wanted a genuine mandate to do it. And there was no better way to achieve that than to show she could be a responsible leader in this most extreme of situations. When she finally ran for office, the electorate would know her by her deeds.
"As long as I can keep Jason on a choke chain, of course, and he doesn't ruin it for me. If he gets out of hand, well, there's always Fett." "Have you ever kept Nuna?" she asked.
"Not in the apartment."
"I'm told they tend to form rival groups within the flock, and they can get very territorial. Squabbles break out. Now let wild boar saws into the coop, and it's bedlam. They go into a killing frenzy, grab as many Nuna to eat later as they can, and escape. They don't care which group they eat. That's your Mandalorians."
It's a lovely analogy, but it's lost on me.
Forget strategy. Mandalorians don't care who wins. They just want to eat, drink, fight, and maintain their self-image.
Giselle gave her a long, wary stare. You're the Supreme Commander. I assume you can assess a military risk.
You want my assessment? Fett has no intention of expanding his small sphere of influence. Mandalorians might have been a mighty empire a few millennia ago, but they can't handle the difficult business of running a modern, complex democracy. They know it, so they just want to live their primitive warrior fantasy and revel in their reputation.
Which is earned.
I accept that they're phenomenal soldiers.
They kicked out the Empire and the Yuuzhan Vong, without any help from us.
That still doesn't mean they want to dominate the galaxy. There are fewer than 3 million of them on Mandalore now, and they don't have anything like a government structure that could organize them well enough to take over the GA or the Confederation. They'll always be the Bursa let loose among Nuna. They're opportunistic feeders.
But Fett's a smart, smart man. Forget the Wookiee braids.
He wants to see Jason Solo fall a long way,
Neothel said.
I don't buy fostering galactic chaos just to get back at one man, even if it's Jason.
No, we've created our own chaos. Fett's just the distraction act.
2 minutes to go. Neothel sipped a glass of water and rolled her head to loosen her neck. There was nothing worse than a strained voice caused by tight muscles. She needed to sound relaxed, regretful, but authoritative.
As long as he plays bogeyman, the GA holds together, because the smaller planets are scared the Mandalorians will be back, and they'll cling to us for protection.
Or rush to the Confederation.
Not if the Confederation buys Fett's arms and we don't. We can rob him of his neutrality, or at least the appearance of it.
Giselle continued to look at her as if she'd arrived from beyond the Outer Rim. He was taking this coup, and she was happy to call it that in private, remarkably well. Given his position, she'd expected him to want a piece of the action.
Gavli, will you run for the Chief of State's office in due course?
Will there be a Chief of State?
I fully intend to return to elections and civil rule once the war is over.
Then no, I won't. I'm fine not being where Omus was. If a thing can happen once, it can happen twice.
Giselle steered her toward the access to the floating platform.
You need to watch your back with Jason.
I know,
she said.
So I'm neutralizing him now. Start as you mean to go on.
The word neutralize had several unfortunate meanings, and judging by the look on Giselle's face, he'd thought of the worst one.
No, just tactically. Where is he anyway?
He probably had some fingers he needed to break. Let me worry about finding him later.
Giselle followed her onto the platform.
Here we go.
Neothel looked down at her boots as she stepped onto the platform, and when she looked up, the sheer scale of the Senate chamber unsettled her for a split second. It was a blessing. She knew her genuine dismay would come across as humble reluctance. There was nothing worse for a new military dictator than looking too keen. For a chamber of thousands of delegates, even with the recent secessions and defections, it was remarkably quiet. Her platform drifted serenely into the center of the massive chamber, she was looking into lights and shadows, generally unable to see faces. It was, in so many senses, a theatrical stage complete with blinding footlights.
"Gentle beings,"
she began. Formal. Strictly formal was the best bet, she calculated.
"I never expected to be addressing you in this way, and I find myself barely prepared for it. I greatly regret the need to stand on this platform, but the need has arisen. It will be a need for the shortest period possible, and apart from the temporary leadership of the GA, nothing else will change. I stress that. There is no curfew, no censorship, and none of the other trappings of martial law. Had Chief Omis been taken ill, I would be standing here anyway, and nobody would be panicking. What's happened overnight is no more constitutionally significant than that. I've merely exercised my responsibility as the Supreme Commander to deputize for the Chief of State, on the advice of the GA Security Services. As soon as the general security situation with the Confederation is resolved, and I expect that to be within the short term, I'll step down and we'll hold elections for the Chief's office.
There wasn't a single lie in there. There was never any need to lie. She meant every word. There was simply information that the Senate didn't have. And everyone went through life with an incomplete picture of the galaxy anyway. One of the representatives for Kuat signaled to speak.
"When you refer to the security services, Admiral, do you mean Alliance Intel or the GAG?
Neothel wondered if Gasil had engineered the question, because it was so perfectly on cue.
"I'd like to share some material with you," she said, "so that you understand where the need to act arose."
It was possibly contempt of court to show the images of Omis's meeting with Gedgen. Evidence like that would prejudice his chance of a fair trial. But she had a shrewd idea that Omis wouldn't be cleared by a jury, return to work with his reputation intact, and sue the GA for wrongful arrest. In his case, the arrest was verdict and sentence in one. She gestured for the images to be projected onto the viewing screen on each delegate's platform. It was gratifying to hear the faint exclamations of surprise as the scene played out, complete with Alliance Intel officers. Neothel displayed a little dignified pain at the moment of betrayal, when Der Gedgen discussed how to remove her and Jason from their posts. The silence that followed was perfect.
"So you'll understand why I felt I had to take advice from the GAG. Because Alliance Intel's objectivity may have been compromised by attendance at that meeting," she said. "And while it's not illegal for two heads of state at war to have discussions, it's unacceptable for them to plan the removal of a Supreme Commander without consulting the Security and Intelligence Council."
She hoped they noted that the chair of that council was sitting at her right hand. It was time for him to do his party piece. So she sat down and let Gasil have the floor.
"I've got very little to add," Gasil said, "except to say that I'm saddened to come to this. A word about the presence of GA troops on the streets alongside CSF officers. This is simply a precaution, in case the anarchic elements on Coruscant try to take advantage of the situation. As in any democracy, they have the right to exist and to speak. But if any of them attempt to capitalize on the situation, then the rule of law will be upheld."
"Well, there's no need for the anarchists to overthrow the government now, is there?" said the delegate from Harun Kal. "You got there first."
"With that in mind," Niafa continued, "I intend to ask Colonel Jason Solo to act as joint chief of state with me. A matter of checks and balances, so that the temporary power doesn't rest with one person, and one can subject the other to scrutiny."
She let the comment from Harun Kal pass. Nobody else picked up on it. By failing to invoke the full range of emergency restrictions she now had the right to impose, she felt she'd sent out a clear message that this really was a case of an embarrassed and reluctant military being hauled in to mind the shop because the civilian head of state had been a very naughty boy. It seemed to have worked. Either the Senate was collectively terrified, or it was 90% convinced, 10% wary. She would settle for either. Giselle followed her back to her office. She sat down and felt the relief flood her.
"Next," said Giselle, and poured two cups of caff from the dispenser. "We have a breathing space while the senators panic about their share prices and the Corellian administration flounders like beached daggers."
"Reopen the stock exchange," she said. "I need to see the finance secretary at some point today to arrange for treasury intervention if the market panics again. I'm bringing Alliance Intel under GAG command, and assigning Captain Gearden to that..."
"Oh, classic."
"And I want Omis's office sealed until further notice."
Giselle looked mildly surprised.
"You're not moving in there?"
"I'm not. And neither is Jason. It smacks of enthusiasm for power rather than necessary duty. We seal it as it stands, which is best practice in terms of allowing CSF to preserve a potential crime scene."
She tapped the internal comm code for Senate building maintenance into her desk keypad.
"And nobody fights over whose chair it is."
Giselle finally gave way to the smile that was trying to cross his face.
"And what an elegant way to neutralize Jason, should he hanker after power. Give it to him to start with."
"You don't need to know we did a deal. I don't like having opposing forces approaching from the rear, Gvli. I like them where I can see them."
"That's the first time I've heard you refer to Jason as opposing."
"We want the same outcomes," she said carefully, aware of how ephemeral alliances were in this game. "Order, stability, and peace. I don't care for his methods, that's all. Once I manage to teach him that putting citizens in camps and killing prisoners is not the done thing, we'll get on just fine."
"You have to see the Jedi Council, too."
"I'll see Skywalker later, but not the rest of the armed mystics."
Niafal paused and sent a message to Luke that she wanted to continue the good working relationship he'd had with Omis, and that he would be welcome for an informal discussion. She'd remain cautious, though, because they seemed to represent a third and unelected power, neither civilian nor military, and every time she looked at Jason Solo, she saw just what Jedi could turn into.
"This has been surprisingly civilized," Giselle said. "The business of the chamber is going on as usual. No riots, no protests, no counter-revolution."
"It isn't lunchtime yet."
"Nevertheless, this is remarkable."
"And we have a war going on, even if the Corellians are spinning their wheels at the moment. Bethawi isn't. I have crews out there on the front line.
It was simply a statement of fact. She still wore a uniform. And whatever her ambitions, the service ethic was very nearly coded into her genes by now. She really did have a war to win and people to bring home alive.
"Oh, you're good," Gasil said, misreading her totally. "You're very good. Stang, I might even vote for you on the strength of today's showing."
That was the only way Neothel wanted to remain in this post. By election. It made it much easier to hang on to it than being a dictator. She was also an officer who liked her moral lines, her rules of engagement, completely clear. Within those, though, she believed in taking the battle to the enemy and pressing home every advantage.
"I look forward to it," she said.
Jedi Council Chamber. It had been a long night, and the morning's news left Luke reeling. He looked at Mara across the chamber, noted that her injuries were largely healed, and wondered when she was going to be ready to talk to him about what was making her grind her teeth in her sleep. Something had got to her, and the fact that she was silent and not raging about it worried him. It meant it was more than Lumia or Alima.
"Makes you wonder what tomorrow might bring," Kip said wearily, scratching his head with both hands as if he were shampooing his hair. "A bombshell with every bulletin."
"I haven't always seen eye to eye with Omis, but I don't believe he's a security risk."
Luke had never handled frustration well, and age hadn't mellowed that. He could see what was happening. He knew his history, and he had no love of military government. Nobody of his generation who'd grown up under the Empire did.
"So now we have two threats, an external war and an internal coup. Where do we concentrate our efforts?"
"Well, Neothel is well within her rights to assume power under the circumstances," Corin said. "So it's not exactly a coup, and much as we might not like it as citizens with a vote, as Jedi we have no business interfering in that."
"Can I say it?" Kip asked. "Because it's just staring us in the face and nobody's mentioning it."
"Go on."
"Jason! There, I said it. Jason, Jason, Jason! What in the name of the Force is going on here? Okay, maybe we should have taken him to task when he started kicking down doors with the GAG. Now, overnight, he's busted the Chief of State and taken over. Extreme? Out of control, my friends!"
"Has he actually declared himself Joint Chief of State? Personally?"
Silgal looked up. "Admiral Neothel announced it. We've heard nothing from Jason."
"Then maybe it wasn't his idea." Luke looked at Mara to catch her eye, but she seemed in a world of her own.
"Mara?" "Sorry." She snapped to attention, blinking.
"I don't see Jason being dragged kicking and screaming to the big office somehow. Regardless of who came up with the idea, he's hardly rushed to decline the honor."
"He's gone to ground," said Kip. "We've been through a whole 24 hours of news bulletins without seeing him. He must be chained up somewhere to keep him away from reporters."
"How would we know?" Corin asked. "He never talks to us, and he's holed up in his cozy GAG bunker when he's not out harassing Corellians."
"Time I went to see him," said Luke. "I mean really see him. Neothel's sent a message saying she wants to maintain the good relationship between the Jedi Council and the Chief's office. I'm taking her up on that as soon as she can clear her schedule." Mara seemed to be concentrating on the proceedings again.
"If I didn't know Corellia was in dire straits over Gedgen's death,
I'd have said it was an outside attempt to destabilize the GA. If he'd still been alive, they'd have moved in on us by now.
It was an interesting thought that suddenly got more interesting in Luke's mind as he rolled it around. Mara could always spot the issue. The two events might have been coincidental, or they might not, but the assassination was tied up with the removal of Omis, and not only because he'd been meeting the Corellian shortly before he died. The crazier news programs were speculating wildly that Omis had been directly involved in the assassination, but Luke felt that something more convoluted was happening, and judging by the grinding cog's expression on her face, Mara did too. She wasn't quite talking to herself, but her lips moved occasionally, involuntarily, as she stared into the mid-distance.
"You used to talk everything through with me, Mara. What happened?"
"You know what," Kip said, "we're missing an important point. As Jedi, either we're players in GA politics, or we're another instrument of the elected leadership, like the fleet. If we're the latter, then we might have our opinions, but we do as the legitimate leadership directs. If we're not, then we've got no more right to start interfering with the status quo than the monster raving anarchist party. Jason might be completely off the charts now, but he's not acting as a Jedi. He's an officer in the security forces who happens to be a Jedi."
"When my front doors come crashing in with a GAG boot," Corin said, "that's going to make me feel so much better."
Kip twisted around in his seat to jab a finger in Corin's direction.
"I'm not saying we shouldn't act, just that we need to be clear where we stand. And Neothel and Jason are within their rights."
"There's rights," said Mara, "and there's right."
Kip raised an eyebrow.
"And the semantics thought for the day was brought to you by our sponsors..."
"I'm seeing Neothel," said Luke, slapping his palm down on the arm of his chair. "I should have gone with my gut so long ago. I really did take my eye off the ball trying to live up to this role.
And before we start griping about lack of action, think about this. When it was a matter of your not approving of Ben's involvement with the GAG, it was a choice between letting him carry on and hauling a teenage boy home. Now we're talking about action against... what, exactly? Stage our own coup? Depose Neothel? Confiscate Jason's lightsaber? I'm up for most things, I admit, but we have to think this through, because we might leave matters worse than before we started."
"Well, trying to talk him around is off the menu," said Mara. "So I'm sticking with going after the irritant in this, Lumia. But let's not forget that Omis didn't exactly behave sensibly, and Neothel isn't in Lumia's thrall. She's got her own agenda, and I don't get any sense of the dark side influencing that."
Luke knew she was right. The dynamics were complex. The best thing Jedi could do was to tackle the things that non-Force users couldn't. Once again, he missed the clarity of thoroughly evil adversaries, or at least those he thought were evil. It was hard to turn against your allies. It was as hard as turning against your own family. Now they were one and the same. GAG Headquarters, Coruscant. The worst thing about waking up that morning was the few seconds of blank comfort before remembering what had happened. And then the world collapsed again. Ben couldn't stop seeing Jory LeCouf everywhere he looked. He couldn't face staying at home. He needed the company of his friends, the people who missed LeCouf too. As he walked through the GAG security gates, and the system accepted his identicard to open the blast-proof doors,
Every face in the corridor was Lacalf's. When Ben went into the locker room, he could hear his voice. It was a running nightmare conjured up by a combination of his force senses and the simple human reaction to fresh bereavement. He wanted it to stop, but he felt he was being disloyal to a dead friend for wanting not to see him everywhere. Zavirk was still in the monitoring room. He looked up at Ben and tapped the mute button on his earpiece.
You okay? Fine. I won't say it. Fine. And not your fault, okay? Could have been any one of us.
Zavirk tapped the button again and dragged the adjacent chair closer for Ben to sit down.
You heard that the boss is... well, really the boss now? Yeah. Should be good news for us.
Ben knew that his father would say it wasn't good news at all. He sat in the monitoring room for a while, just grateful to be among the troopers, and then wandered off to find a quiet spot. If he couldn't handle this kind of stuff without being devastated, he'd be no use in the GAG. Every other trooper here got on with it. Chevu had probably had an awful conversation with Lacalf's parents, but when Ben walked by his office, he was hard at work, marking up a duty roster on the wall and getting on with things.
Okay, I'm 14. I could say, all right, I'm just a kid, and I don't have to be tough when my buddies get killed, but I can't pick and choose when I act like an adult. I've got to get on with it, or go to school like every other kid my age. And he was scaring his mother.
She had enough problems of her own hunting Lumia. According to the roster display, Jason was on duty. The time codes showed he'd been at HQ since about 1 in the morning. Ben couldn't feel his presence, but that didn't surprise him now. There was a time when Jason had hidden in the force when he had to. Now he only showed himself when he seemed to feel it was necessary. Without thinking about it, Ben found himself shutting down, too. As he walked down the corridor, the tiles still gleaming with spots of water because the cleaning droids were just meters ahead of him, he let himself merge with the matter and energy around him. The more he did it, the less he felt like he was in a trance, cut off from reality, and the more he felt like he was observing the world as it truly was. Particles within particles. It gave him a fleeting feeling of serene clarity. It was relief of a kind. At the top of the corridor, a pair of doors led to the holding cells. That area was always kept shut, but today there was a notice fixed on the wall next to it that read, "Top-level clearances only." They were holding Chief Omis down there. It seemed surreal. Ben carried on toward Jason's office, and he could see as he rounded the corner that the doors were open. As usual, he couldn't feel Jason's presence, but he could hear him talking to someone.
Who is it? Odd. I can't feel anybody else.
Jason might have been on his comlink, but his tone of voice wasn't that slightly stilted, self-conscious one that he tended to lapse into when he couldn't see who he was speaking to. In fact, he sounded as if he was trying to keep his temper.
"You overplayed your hand," said Jason.
"You worry too much,"
said a woman's voice. That was the point at which Ben realized something was very wrong. Only a Jedi could be there and not be sensed, or a Yuuzhan Vong, and they weren't exactly frequent visitors to the GAGHQ. And the voice was somehow familiar, even though he couldn't place it. It was dishonest to sneak up on his commanding officer, on his cousin, his mentor, but it seemed like the only sensible thing to do. Keeping himself hidden in the force, Ben edged silently along the corridor and stood as close to the open doors as he could. This wing of the headquarters building was deserted, and Jason probably relied on sensing people coming and going. He thought he and his guest were alone.
"You cut it too fine," Jason was saying. "There's being a decoy, and there's being too clever, and you crossed that line. Are you recovered now?"
"Yes,"
said the woman's voice. It had that slightly husky edge to it, like she used too many death sticks.
"But it worked. It gave you the space to act without having her crawling all over your operation. She really thinks I want revenge for some daughter."
"I sometimes think your cover stories are too complex."
"And mind-rubbing Ben about Nelani isn't?"
Ben recoiled. It was all he could do not to storm in.
"Jason, you did that?"
"He wouldn't understand why I had to do it," said Jason.
"And that's why he can't ever be your apprentice. Get rid of him. Find another one and stop wasting your time."
"Now there's my real problem."
"I can't help you there. Whoever it turns out to be, that's the Force's decision. You'll know very soon."
"Well, I dealt with Omis anyway. A clear path."
"Are you going to keep him here?"
"I thought house arrest might be more sensible in the long term. Republica House is easy to secure, and it makes us look like the good guys. People still like Omis."
"And here you are, Joint Chief of State."
"That way Neothel thinks she can keep me quiet."
"Or under control."
"She's way too smart."
"Play nicely with her. You need her to keep the military behind you."
"You're such a strategist, Lumia."
"Lumia? Lumia?"
Ben thought he'd misheard, or that his state of mind was making him hear what he wanted to hear, like LeCauf's voice. But he knew what he'd heard, and his first reaction wasn't one of fear or dread, but agonized embarrassment. He'd trusted Jason, and Jason had lied to him. He'd mind-rubbed him, and they were talking about him as if he was in the way. The fact that Jason was knowingly talking to a Sith as if they were old friends seemed to take second place to that. For all his denial, Jason knew Lumia, and she could walk into GAGHQ and just talk to him. Jason wasn't being conned by her. He was chatting casually with her about what he'd do next. Ben found himself scrabbling for excuses that would explain why Jason could be meeting with Lumia and still be someone he could trust. Someone with a perfectly good reason for it all.
"Jason's a Jedi. He can't be in league with her. She's done something to him. Mind-influenced him or something."
This woman had left his mother with a battered face. This woman was all he'd been taught to fear and avoid. And Jason was talking to her in his office as bold as anything. Ben knew he had to tell someone, but he'd run out of people to trust. If Jason could be influenced like that, anyone could. Except Mom. Mom wasn't in Lumia's thrall, or she wouldn't have been in a fight with her. Ben had to find her. He had to warn her. That morning he'd felt like things couldn't possibly get any worse. And now he knew they could.